Hi, you're with Truth News Radio Australia, and it's the 31st of December 2013. My name's Hereward Fenton. Welcome to another show, and indeed the last show of 2013 on this very last day of the year. And folks, tonight I'm bringing you something a little different. I've decided to put together my list of what I consider to be the most egregious crimes against truth of the year, and I've got a list of the top 10, which I'm going to be running through for you in fairly short order. Of course, the choice is a subjective one. I've made that based on my observations, and I decided to make it a top 10 list. It could easily have been 20 or 30 or 100. I mean, there are so much to choose from. I should perhaps explain what I mean when I talk about crimes against truth. It is perhaps a new term, maybe it hasn't really been used before, but it occurred to me as an elegant way of summarising a particular type of injustice. For instance, in the Nuremberg trials after the Second World War, we had the concept of crimes against peace, which has been considered to be very, very important in jurisprudence and in international law. But the question of crimes against truth, I believe, is also extremely important. And indeed, in many ways, the crimes against truth that are perpetrated on a large scale by nation states and by large corporations and by government functionaries, these actually facilitate many of the other crimes, including the crimes of war and more base crimes such as, you know, theft and the crimes associated with big business and generally degrading people's quality of life through deception, trickery, and theft. So in today's show, I'm actually going to focus on what I consider to be the most significant of these. And indeed, when I do that, I'm not really focusing on the sort of factors such as the number of people who might have been injured or the size of the crime specifically. We're really looking at the impact of the untruth in terms of its negative impact upon society in general. So in some cases, I'm going to focus on something which appears to be a fairly small issue. You could say it's a micro issue. And you might say, well, why is that so important? Well, it's important because of what it actually signifies and symbolizes. So this is my subjective summary, and I do encourage you to respond, and if you have an alternate take on anything I say, please get back to me and I'll actually discuss it on the show. I should point out that I've actually included in this list a couple of conspiracy theories, and again, this may be a bone of contention among some listeners, because what I've noticed among many who call themselves truthers is that there is a tendency to want to kind of group together to be loyal, a sort of tribal loyalty towards what they consider to be the alternate views of the world, and a tendency, therefore, to not criticize or question conspiracy theories, no matter how bizarre or ridiculous they may be. But when you consider what the mission statement, the purpose of this show is, which is basically to expose lies, deception, and spin wherever they occur, you have to accept that it is just as important for us on this show to debunk popular conspiracy theories where they are promulgating propaganda that's untrue, as it is to question and criticize the major media cartels. And in many ways, I feel that the disinformation that is put forward in under the guise of alternate news or truth research is in many ways more damaging than the mainstream news, because it discredits. And in an information war, the credibility of your information, the credibility of your source, is so important, because it's about perceptions. It's about how people view you and those you associate with and everything you stand for. So when hoaxes get introduced into the talking points of well-known alternative news sources and then are uncritically repeated, that really does create a very, very serious problem for all of us. So I'm going to be targeting a couple of those in the show, and I won't be targeting those towards the end. So if you're really keen to find out what they are, I suggest you fast forward to the last segment of this show. But we'll be starting with the major ones that I think we probably all can all agree on that are the most significant and egregious in terms of their effect on really the whole world. So without further ado, I bring you the top 10 crimes against truth for 2013. Okay, number one on our list of crimes against truth is the false claim that the US economy is in recovery. Now, this may surprise you that I've led with this as actually being number one on my list. I believe it is an extremely important one. I believe that this deception that the US economy is in recovery is actually going to lead to a crash and a collapse, which is going to be far worse. And the longer it the longer the deception is kept in place, the more catastrophic it will in fact be. And we've seen a number of techniques of deception used, the most ridiculous of which have been the claims made by the outgoing chief of the Federal Reserve, Ben Bernanke, that the system of monetary policy known as quantitative easing is actually going to be tapered. And that the extreme measures which were put in place after the global financial crisis of 2008 can now gradually be brought to an end because things are getting better. Now, I thought maybe a very, very brief lesson in the actual definition here of quantitative easing may be in order, because these words are often bandied about and it's expected that people know what they mean, whereas in fact it's never ever been explained. And they use these terms on the news all the time, and did they ever define them in the first place? So let's go to Wikipedia, and I will start here with the definition of quantitative easing from Wikipedia. Quantitative easing, QE, is an unconventional monetary policy used by central banks to stimulate the economy when standard monetary policy has become ineffective. A central bank implements quantitative easing by buying specified amounts of long-term financial assets, thus increasing the monetary base and lowering the yield on those financial assets. This is distinguished from the more usual policy of buying or selling government bonds in order to keep interbank interest rates at a specified target value. Expansionary monetary policy typically involves the central bank buying short-term government bonds in order to lower short-term market interest rates. However, when short-term interest rates are at or close to zero, normal monetary policy can no longer lower interest rates. Quantitative easing may then be used by monetary authorities to further stimulate the economy by purchasing assets of longer maturity than short-term government bonds, and thereby lowering longer-term interest rates further out on the yield curve. Quantitative easing raises the prices of the financial assets bought, which lowers their yield. Now, this is very, very important to bear in mind, because recently we have had some much publicized claims from the mainstream media, and this indeed came from the Federal Reserve itself, that the policy known as quantitative easing was about to be switched off, slowly, tapered, as they say. And the meme there, the spin is that the US economy is starting to pick up, and we don't actually need these policies anymore, and that as a result, we will be moving back to, I guess, a more standard sort of monetary policy. But there's something very wrong with this, folks. There's something very wrong with what you've been told here, because at the same time as we're being told that, they're also stating that the interest rates will stay at or very near to zero. In other words, the interest rates will not be coming up. Now, I've got an article here from Sydney Morning Herald, which was published on December 20, 2013. A very interesting point to note is that when these announcements were made, that the share markets surged, and there was a huge surge in the US dollar. But at the same time as that, the statements that were actually coming from the Federal Reserve said that the interest rates wouldn't be changing. Article here from Sydney Morning Herald. US Federal Reserve pledges to keep its interest rates at low levels. The US dollar rose on the back of the decision to taper, pushing the Australian currency to its lowest level in more than 3 years. The Fed said it would trim its $85 billion a month bond buying program to $75 billion a month in January, with future reductions dependent on improving economic data. But the really important point to notice here is that interest rates are going to stay where they are. And remember, the whole purpose of quantitative easing, the reason why it was brought in, was it was a more radical, extreme measure to actually bring interest rates down. So, sure, they're actually reducing the number of bonds that they're actually going to be buying from $85 billion to $75 billion, but it's going to have no effect on interest rates. In other words, ladies and gentlemen, this is a complete bit of fluff. It's a puff piece, but it has been blazoned out across all of the major corporate media around the world and caused a surge in the US dollar. It caused a slump in the Australian dollar, and God knows what it did to many other currencies around the world. And it's caused this in further bubble in the share market. And they're pumping it. They're pumping the bubble. And the more they do that with these false statements, these completely erroneous claims, the bigger that bubble is going to get. And when the bubble pops, the worse it is going to be. And let's just read to you here a couple of indicators of exactly how bad it is indeed getting. I've got an article here from the Economic Collapse blog on December 26, 2013. The stock market has officially entered crazy town territory. It is time to crank up the Looney Tunes theme song because Wall Street has officially entered crazy town territory. Stocks just keep going higher and higher. And at this point, what is happening in the stock market does not bear any resemblance to what is going on in the overall economy whatsoever. So how long can this irrational state of affairs possibly continue? Stocks seem to go up no matter what happens. If there is good news, stocks go up. If there is bad news, stocks go up. If there is no news, stocks go up. On Thursday, the day after Christmas, the Dow was up another 122 points to another new all-time record high. In fact, the Dow has had an astonishing 50 high closes this year. So, again, the same picture, what I was saying earlier, the bubble is getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and it's getting bigger exponentially. And that is a sign that the bubble is going to burst real soon, folks. Another article here from the same source. Is America about to reach a breaking point? Anger grows as unemployment benefits get cut. In America today, there are close to 50 million people living in poverty. Now, we are about to go to break. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, and I'm going through the top 10 list of crimes against truth for 2013. Do stay with us. It's going to be a great show. Don't go away.
Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free.
Welcome back, you're with Truth News Radio Australia. My name's Herriwood Fenton. Lovely to be talking to you today on this very last day of the year, 2013. You may not be getting this broadcast live, probably you've got better things to do on New Year's Eve, but if you are getting it live, if you're in your car or doing something that leads you to be listening to the radio, it's a great pleasure to be having your company. And if you'd like to get in touch with me, unfortunately the show is not live currently, and normally I would very much encourage people to call in and give their opinions, but you can actually get in touch with me by email from the website truthnews.com.au, and you can have a chat, and I'll raise any questions or concerns you do have about what you've heard in the show. Now, just continuing here with our list, we were still actually on number one, which was the false claim that the US economy is in recovery. And just reading here an article by Michael Snyder from the Economic Collapse blog, in which he says there are close to 50 million people living in poverty in the United States, and more than 100 million people that get money from the federal government every month. As the middle class disintegrates, poverty is climbing to unprecedented levels. Even though the stock market has been setting record high after record high, the amount of anger and frustration boiling just under the surface in our nation grows with each passing day. And now extended unemployment benefits have been cut off for 1.3 million unemployed Americans, and it is being projected that a total of 5 million unemployed Americans will lose their benefits by the end of 2014. So again, folks, this just adds to the picture of an extremely fragile, extremely vulnerable situation, much more vulnerable and fragile than it was in 2007 as we approached that collapse which took place, which showed all the signs that we're seeing now in terms of a grossly overinflated share market bubble, but we're different in many other ways. But certainly the share market bubble is always one of the biggest indicators as we approach collapse. But the overall health and wealth of the nation is so much weaker and so much worse. So when the crunch comes, the people who are now on the edge are going to just fall into despair and disaster very, very quickly. The ones who are already over the edge, you know, Lord only knows what's going to happen. I mean, it looks to me as if the US is going to go into a steep decline in terms of being the, you know, the predominant economic superpower on this planet, as to their position being the dominant military superpower. That really depends on what the Chinese are doing, but we know that they are building aircraft carriers, and I think they've got a couple now. And once they start to catch up with the US in these key indicators, the Chinese, because of their vastly stronger economy, will just rapidly take over as being the new world superpower, and then the decline of the US will happen very, very rapidly. But as that occurs, or maybe before that occurs, there may be one last gasp of empire, and that typically would be some catastrophic war, as we've seen in the past. Which indeed leads me to the next in my list of top 10 crimes against truth. The next couple of topics I'm going to be discussing with you are interrelated, and also interrelated to the economic collapse of the US, because we're talking here about the flames of conflict being fanned in the Middle East, which will then lead to a wider conflagration, which will then draw in other large powers and will force a confrontation. So the next one on my list, ladies and gentlemen, is Syria. And the litany of lies and deceptions about what is really going on in Syria is so long, I don't have the time to even run through with you, but I have in the past, and I know many listeners are aware of it. But you have been subjected in the mainstream media to a bombardment of utterly preposterous untruths about what is actually happening in Syria. And there's two completely alternate realities. There's the reality that you can get from watching BBC and CNN and ABC Online and, you know, all the various Western news sources. Or you can dig a little and you can go to RT and you can watch Syrian Girl on YouTube, and you can read between the lines of even what's in the mainstream news and just use your common sense, and you can see that Syria is the victim of a foreign insurgency which is affiliated with the US-backed terrorist organization known as Al-Qaeda, which is simply used as a weapon, sometimes to inflict terror on our own people, including America and Australia, or used to inflict terror on other countries. And we saw it happened in Libya, and we see it happening in Syria, and we see a government there actually trying to defend its sovereignty, trying to protect its people against a savage attack, really from outsiders, being portrayed as if there was some sort of peaceful protest movement, like a democracy movement of students who simply wanted freedom and rights, who were cruelly crushed by the savage, brutal regime of Bashar al-Assad. A man who has been extremely cozy with many Western leaders for many years, speaks fluent English, went to Cambridge, his wife is a doctor. I mean, these people are really very closely tied to the West. And I'm not saying that makes them good or bad. I'm just saying it's interesting because they have suddenly flip-flopped into being the arch-enemies, as we saw happened with Saddam Hussein, as we saw happened with Gaddafi, who had actually been flip-flopped a couple of times from being a bad guy to a good guy and a bad guy again. The main thing to point out here, though, is that in terms of the context of today's show, the crimes against truth in regard to Syria are extreme, and their consequences are going to be extreme, very, very serious for the whole world. Now, of course, one of the most significant of those is the claims that the Syrian government had used chemical weapons against its own people. And there have been a whole lot of leaks recently, which I don't actually have time to get into in detail with you, but believe me, these are pretty solid. And these are from people who are on the ground, who some of them were actually reporting directly for CNN, but there were some leaks of the discussions that they had with some of their associates that show that they knew that the rebels in Syria had access to chemical weapons, and they knew that the rebels would be willing to use those weapons, even on their own people, as it were, in order to win the propaganda war. Because we're dealing here with completely psychopathic, deranged people. We're dealing with mercenaries who are really just driven by the sort of crazed, craven mentality that comes with war and profiteering. They're not really Islamic fanatic. There may be some of that in their groups, but the ones who are organizing and doing it are trained war-mongering mercenaries, ladies and gentlemen. And they've probably been associated with various conflicts in the past. Now, many people looking at the situation in Syria will probably say, well, come on, Herod, take it easy, sit back, you know, just chill, bro, because things have been looking better in Syria for the past few months. And the overtures from the US after the Russians brokered an agreement to look into the weapons there, and the Syrian government agreed to hand over those weapons, those chemical weapons stockpiles, made it look as if there was a rapprochement with the Syrian government and that really the crisis was coming to an end. But I never believed that, and I did say that in previous shows, that I thought that was not going to happen. And there are many reasons now to believe that, in fact, the facade, the charade of that rapprochement is now evaporating, and I will be getting back into that when we come back from break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia, Top 10 Crimes Against Truth for 2013. Stay with us. welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. It's a great pleasure talking to you today. And I am running through the 10 biggest crimes against truth for 2013. And I'm still on number 2 on the list here. I've got quite a bit to get through, so I'm going to have to move a little more quickly. But let me quickly round off the situation in Syria. Now, I was explaining to you there before the degree of the deception and the overall agenda behind the deceptions. As we see, it's fanning the flames of a bigger conflict, which is part of the collapse of the US. But there are signs now that the false rapprochement that we saw between the US and Syria and the other Western powers is now evaporating, and it's happened very suddenly, as it always does. And myself and other commentators, such as Syrian Girl, had said that when Syria agreed to this chemical weapons deal with the US, that they were actually signing their own death warrant, because it was actually going to lead to the worst-case scenario for Syria. There was a bit of a pause, a bit of a slowdown, but now, and it's really heating up, folks, it's really heating up. We are now seeing a return to the kind of aggressive, threatening rhetoric from the West. And the way it's going to pan out, folks, is they're going to say, look, you know, we tried, we did our best, and you know, this brutal dictator, Bashar al-Assad, he just didn't adhere to the agreements as we had feared all along, you know, and I'm afraid now, well, we've done the best we can, we tried really hard. Of course, it's like a replay of Iraq 2002, isn't it? But that doesn't matter. They don't seem to mind, you know, stale old tactic like that, an old technique that everyone's seen before. I mean, we're dealing with degeneracy here. We're dealing with the sort of the end of an empire. We're dealing with the tail end of an empire where the agenda is being run by decrepit, degenerate military industrial complex, doddering fools who probably are actually bordering on senility themselves. So let's just quickly have a look at the most worrying signs here now about the Syrian conflict. An article here from ABC News from the 29th of December, just a couple of days ago. Syria unlikely to meet chemical weapons removal deadline, UN. Syria is unlikely to meet a December 31 deadline to move its most dangerous chemical arms out of the country, the United Nations has acknowledged for the first time. The UN and the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons said important progress has been made on eliminating Syria's banned weapons, but called on Syrian President Bashar al-Assad to intensify efforts to meet internationally set deadlines. The year-end deadline was the first key milestone under a UN Security Council-backed deal arranged by Russia and the United States that aims to wipe out all of Syria's chemical arms by the middle of 2004. Now, folks, again, this really does just look like a replay of the Iraq situation. And as we were saying, the problem here is that the Syrian government have set themselves up. It's almost like a chess strategy that you don't see coming when you allow the pieces to be put into these positions well in advance. And you don't see it coming. You think, oh, well, you know, the pressure's eased. They're doing a deal. No, they're setting you up, right? They're setting you up for checkmate a little bit further down the track, right? Because the checkmate is going to be Syria, bingo, you know, you didn't adhere to your side of the deal. And look how far we bent over to be Mr. Nice Guy. And what a waste of time it was, because you're so bad, right? And that just sort of incredibly heats up the friction and the tendency towards war. So when it comes, it'll be stronger, it'll be more devastating, and it may even lead to some sort of coalition of the willing, as we saw in Iraq, because remember, the illusion has now been created that an effort was made at a diplomatic resolution to this problem, which unfortunately the Syrian government just didn't live up to because they're just inherently evil. And more indications from the mainstream news that Syria is inherently evil are this latest round of TNT barrel bombs being dropped upon Syrian citizens, apparently, by the Syrian government. Now, I have an article here from Al Jazeera. Syrian regime air raids kill scores in Aleppo. Activists report 80 people dead as northern city is hit by ninth day of regime airstrikes dropping barrel bombs. Notice they say activists report 80 people dead. Well, you know, they'll probably claim, oh, well, we can't get reporters into the country, so it's only the activists that can give us the news. But we've seen that in Syria so many, many times that the news that the Western cartel media uses is always brought to you by activists. More than 80 people are reported to have been killed in a fresh aerial bombardment of the northwestern Syrian city of Aleppo. Monday's attacks followed on from Sunday's air raids, which targeted Aleppo's Mahzaken neighbourhood, hitting a second-hand market and a two-storey building in a main road. The bombs apparently destroyed vehicles lining a main road and a two-storey building, leaving a crater where part of the markets were. Activists said the airstrikes were carried out by government helicopters that dropped barrel bombs, crude devices filled with explosives and fuel that are wildly inaccurate but cause massive damage on impact. The bombs are explosive-filled cylinders or oil drums that are often rolled out of the back of helicopters with little attempt at striking a particular target. They are capable of causing widespread casualties and significant damage. Human rights groups have said that even if Syrian forces are targeting rebels with the bombs, they often explode in residential areas, killing civilians. And we've got claims here that the Syrian government was attacking schools. And basically, the picture has been created. The Syrian government is just a rampant, deranged, depraved regime of psychopathic killers that just drop these horrendous weapons from helicopters. I mean, Lord knows why they would need to do that. I mean, the Syrians actually have a very sophisticated weapons arsenal, folks. They don't need to be dropping barrels from helicopters, right? They actually have munitions, right? They're getting supplied with arms. We know that. We know that the Syrians are actually pretty well armed. And I'm not saying I know that this story isn't true. It just reads like propaganda. But why is it important? Well, it's important, again, as a crime against truth, because it means that the propaganda war against Syria is now stepping up once more, and we're returning back to that bombardment of lies, which can only signify that the final conflict is approaching, and it is a very, very serious situation indeed. So the second on our list of crimes against truth is the media reportage on the Syrian situation. Okay, let's turn now to number three on our list of crimes against truth, and this is a closely related one to the previous. This is the egregious lies about Iran in the mainstream news, which are also fanning the flames of war leading to some sort of catastrophic conflict. And indeed, just as we are seeing now a resurgence of propaganda against Syria, we are also seeing a quiet resurgence of propaganda against Iran. And to give you an example of that, I've got an article here from Al Arabiya titled "Israel Drives a Wedge Between Britain and Iran." Whenever a Western leader expresses undying support for the Zionist state, the Jewish Chronicle can be relied upon to make the most of it. This week, it reports on UK Prime Minister David Cameron lighting a menorah, an elegant nine-branch candlestick, with the chief rabbi in Israel. I believe, actually, I'm not quite sure where it is. I believe it might actually be in the UK. But according to the Jewish Chronicle, Cameron took the opportunity to say he didn't have much faith in the interim nuclear agreement struck with Iran. He told assembled Jewish leaders, "I know there will be great skepticism. I know there will be great worry. I share that skepticism. I share that worry. And I don't have any starry-eyed views of what this Iranian regime offers." You're with Truth News Radio Australia. We are going through the top 10 list of crimes against truth, and we are now on to number 3, the Iranian situation. Stay with us. Don't go away. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We're going through the top 10 list of crimes against truth for 2013, and I'm now talking about Iran. And again, we have seen what looked like a softening of relations between Iran and the US, between Iran and the West generally, and we are now seeing a reversal of that position. And there have been a number of stories come out similar to the one we just saw there, where David Cameron, UK Prime Minister, really poured cold water on the view that the situation with Iran was going to be resolved. And here David Cameron is saying an incredible sort of gushing promotion of Israeli interests, in which he says, "I am with you and with the Israeli people. As far as I'm concerned, an enemy of Israel is an enemy of mine. A threat to Israel is a threat to us all. I can promise you this: Britain will stand with Israel. Britain will support Israel. Britain will keep the pressure on Iran. We do not wish you to have a nuclear-armed neighbor, a nuclear threat facing your country. We share that feeling and show you our solidarity." Now, there have been other disturbing signs that Israel is engaging with Saudi Arabia to facilitate a strike against Iran, and that they've actually done an agreement there, I believe, to use Saudi Arabian airspace. There's been a chorus of small signs, all pointing to the fact that this brief thaw that we've seen in the relationship between the West and Iran is indeed just a strategy, just as we saw with Syria, and the heat's going to be turned up again, and it's going to be turned up much hotter than it was before. And already, just as we go into the new year, it's turning up. Normally, if you follow through the pattern of a year, and years often have a particular pattern, we don't see this until a little bit later in the year. The fact is, now they're starting early. That indicates to me that something quite significant is brewing that will come to a head around about the end of the second quarter of 2014, which is similar to what we saw in the lead up to the Iraq War of 2003. So again, I don't have a lot of detail to go through with you in terms of the Iran situation, but I do believe it is so important, folks, because this would be the trigger point for World War III. Syria in itself will not be the trigger point, but Syria will conflagrate. The conflict will engulf Iran. Once Iran is brought into the conflict, either through a direct attack on Iran by Israel or the US, or by Iran coming to the aid of Syria, if the military attacks on Syria are stepped up from inside and even perhaps from outside, if some sort of new resolutions are passed due to Syria's purported failure to live up to its agreements about chemical weapons, then of course Iran will come to the aid of Syria and again trigger for World War III. So very, very important, very, very significant crime against truth being portrayed when we see Iran continuing to be represented as this rogue state with this wicked, wicked program to develop nuclear weapons, when in fact Iran has always complied with the Atomic Agency inspections. It has always lived up to its requirements. It is not in breach, ladies and gentlemen. Again, crime against truth. The facts have been completely distorted and misrepresented because you have been led to believe that Iran is a rogue state that has not complied with the International Atomic Agency. And indeed it has. The claims made against Iran have always been, we believe, we have intelligence sources, we know that Iran is actually engaged in enrichment, right? They've got no proof. They never offer any proof. And they say, oh, well, we know. Exactly as we saw with Iraq. Same pattern. You know, trust us, we have the intelligence. And indeed, a nuclear program can be used to develop weapons or simply nuclear power. And Iran has indeed refused to abandon its nuclear program, and it is a matter of national pride for them to continue to do so. For them to agree, and let me make this very, very clear, if Iraq agreed to these demands and said, well, we're now going to turn off our nuclear program, do you think that would save them? Absolutely not. Just as with Syria, it would guarantee that they get attacked. It would guarantee it, and it would happen quicker. Iraq's stance of not backing down in the face of the hideous propaganda that has been used against them has actually allowed them to survive. Because when you're dealing with rabid, deceptive, criminal mentality that we see in the Western powers with the military-industrial complex, you do not back down. Backing down is the worst thing you can do. So that there is the current situation in regard to the crimes against truth in relation to Iran. Number four on our list, ladies and gentlemen, is the media blockade on truthful reporting about what is happening in Gaza, in Palestine. Now, again, many people may say, well, this is a small issue. It doesn't affect the whole world. It is a serious situation, but it does not warrant to be considered a major crime against truth. Well, I disagree, because the Gaza blockade, which is a real blockade of medical supplies, of human transport to and from Gaza, of food, is very, very serious, leading to illness, death, and despair for the people of Gaza. But the media blockade is what I'm most concerned about in terms of this show, because it is creating the false impression that this crisis does not actually exist. It's very, very rarely mentioned. It's been completely ignored, folks. And it is incredibly serious what is actually taking place in Gaza. Let me just give you an example here. Humanitarian crisis in Gaza, no clean drinking water. This is from 27 December 2013. Palestinian ambassador to Rome launches aid campaign. Thousands of people are without electricity amid floodwaters after heavy snowstorm. And remember, it's been extremely cold there this year. And I'm looking here at a photograph on this article which shows a flooded area of Gaza. But the most shocking part of this is that this flood is actually full of sewerage, ladies and gentlemen. People in Gaza are being flooded with sewerage. The Palestinian ambassador to Rome launched a campaign on Friday to raise funds through movements for the population of the Gaza Strip. Those living in Gaza are suffering not only under the Israeli embargo and the recent military escalation, but also due to the extremely poor weather conditions that have hit the area harder than had been seen in 70 years. While the photos and reports appearing in the media for Christmas focus mostly on Jerusalem covered in snow, another much less an idyllic reality was left in the shadows. In Gaza, the rain and snow of the past few days led to a breakdown of the precarious sewage system, flooding the streets and towns and villages and swamping homes, schools and infrastructure, never even repaired since the 2008-2009 Operation Cast Lead. Clean water was mixed with wastewater, and now there is not a single tap for clean drinking water in the entire Gaza Strip, which 1.8 million Palestinians call home. The Palestinian ambassador noted that amid this situation, Israel has not only continued with its embargo that prohibits even the entrance into the territory of medicine, but also opened its dams through which the Israeli state waters are flushed out into the Mediterranean, contributing to the breakdown of the entire sewage treatment system and flooding Gaza with putrid mud. The situation is entirely out of control, the ambassador said, calling for international mobilization for the people living in the Gaza Strip, most of whom have been left without a roof over their heads, food, drinking water, and heating. Over half the population in Gaza live in refugee camps. The only electricity plant in the Gaza Strip is also on the verge of being shut down by a severe fuel shortage due to the crossing of the Kerem Shalom border crossing with Israel. Electricity distribution will be cut further to only 6 hours per day, with the possibility of it being halted entirely within a week at the most. So, Gaza is facing genocide. I mean, it begins to look like the population of Gaza, 1.8 million people, folks, in a very, very tiny area. I mean, it must be one of the most densely populated places on this planet. The consequences for these people could be very, very serious indeed. So the blockade on media reportage of what is happening in Gaza certainly counts as a very, very serious crime against truth, and it is number 4 on our list. Now, I probably should have done this list backwards and headed to number 1, which is the way these things are normally done. But if I did it that way, you'd probably get bored, because the ones towards the bottom of the list are a little bit different, a little bit fringe. So I think probably we have done right in actually starting with number 1 and moving down the list rather than up. We're about to go to break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. It's extremely enjoyable being with you today. And I'll be back after this break to continue with our list of the top 10 crimes against humanity, and that of course will be after the end of our news bulletin, and we'll be continuing with all of those in the next hour. So don't go away. You're with us for the next hour, and it's going to be a great show, one to tell your mom about. We'll be back after this break.